بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. From amongst the obligations of the Ummah, one obligation is to pass on a pure deen, one generation to the other. This had always been the system of Allah Ta'ala, that every generation saw it compulsory, obligatory to pass on the deen. Whatever deen one generation has acquired, they pass it on to the next, and the next generation passes it on to the third, and so forth and so on. Now, in passing on the deen, there will be some considerations that will have to be made. One consideration is this, that each person does not have the capacity of taking the entire deen, learning, acquiring every department and every chapter of deen. Everybody does not have that type of capacity, nor does he have that type of time, because that's extremely great work. Now, for example, you have to learn all the qiraat, right? All the qiraat. Then the things that are related to all the qiraat, 14, 15 qiraats. Then the rasm-e-khat, that's also part of your deen, that has come from the time of Usman al-Ghani radiallahu ta'ala anhu. Then perfecting the science of hadith, that requires that you learn the hadith and the asma'i rijal that go with it. Now, the asma'i rijal that go with it, sometimes one asma'i rijal is going on to 50 volumes, 40 volumes, 30 volumes. So to be hands-on, to have a hands-on approach on all, then to be able to master the fiqh and all that is related to the fiqh, all the different kitabs as it was passed on from the generations before you, to be able to master all. And when I say all the fiqh, that means all the imams, the fiqh of all the imams, then only will you be able to pass on the deen. If you only confine yourself to the fiqh Hanafi, then the entire deen has not been passed on. Then when you say pass on the entire fiqh, you must know nasikh mansukh, you must know the wujuhat at-tarjih, the reasons for giving preference, and you also need to know which are the statements upon which the earlier muftiyan-e-kiram and ulama have given fatwa upon. So you know the statements, and you know also the reasons for preference, and you know also the fatwa, which is the fatwa that is to be given. Then with all that, you need to master also the science of tafsir. Now, for all this, you will have to master the Arabic language with all the grammar that is related. Right. Now, tell me how many persons you'll find, let alone in Arabic, in the whole world. Can you find one person with all this? It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. Then, with all that, in order to pass the deen, you need to then teach, number one, at a madrasa. You need to write kitabs, Because these are the ways that you'll pass on deen: writing a kitab, teaching, preaching, and going into the masses and spreading deen in that way. So tell me, can everybody be cut out to do all this work? You can't get. I don't think in the whole world you get one person who can do all this. Then there is the other branch of deen, that is tasawwuf, right? Like you say, what is fiqh? Fiqh is ma'arifatun nafs ma lahu wa ma alayhi. That's the definition of fiqh. In short, you will translate it to know your obligations and your privileges, right? Ma lahu ma alayhi. Your obligations and your privileges. These are the privileges and these are your obligations. So when we talk about fiqh, then we talk normally, we talk about the zahir of deen, namaz, how many rakats, what breaks namaz, what is the procedure for namaz, and what are the forbidden times, what are the permissible times. So generally when we speak about fiqh, we speak about those things that are apparent. And the things that are not apparent, right, that you won't find your fiqh kitabs discussing these aspects. Like what is jealousy, for example, right? What is pride? What are the indications of pride? And what is the tafsil, what is the explanation and the detail of pride? How do you detect pride within you? Number two. Number three, how do you eliminate this pride? Right? Then to master that field, to be able to understand it, to detect it, and then to be able to eliminate it. That's a branch on its own. So there's so many things that you need to keep your hands on. Right? Then the sixth thing that you'll need to learn is how to convey, right? Tabligh and all that. An alim will have to go 1 year, sometimes 3 years, just to learn how to do tabligh, just to learn how to go and convey the word of Allah Ta'ala. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, then you can say more or less he's got an idea. Then too, you can't say he's perfect, but he's got an idea. He knows most, mashallah, say 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 10, he knows what to do, provided he keeps the right type of relationship with the responsible people, and those people that have spent their lives in this work. He keeps that relationship, so more or less he knows now what is required, what are the requirements, and what are the do's, what are the don'ts. Now, I say that everybody is not cut out to do all this. Maybe in the whole world you won't find one person. But then now, on the other end, you have got the work of passing on deen, propagation, da'wat, tabligh. This is an obligation. Qudwatun azimatun fil Islam, or qudwatun azimatun fil deen. To pass on the deen and propagate deen is a great pillar of deen. It's not a small thing, it's a great pillar. It was the Nabi that could manage all that. Nabi, Allah gave him that type of magnanimity, that strength. He can do all this, and then he can engage in jihad, and then he can stand up in tahajjud the entire night. Then he can do with fasting without any food for so many days, just khajur and water. So that was the strength of a Nabi. That was not, it is not possible within the capacity of a normal person to do that, what the Nabi did. That was additional strength. Ayyukum mithli, that additional power and that strength and that backup that Allah Ta'ala had granted him, that he could manage all that. Now you've got a problem that you have to pass on the deen. How do you go about doing it? So you'll have several classes of people amongst the community. The one class, they just want to know what we need to do. They don't want to know the details, and nor have they that ability to comprehend the details. So all you need to tell them is what is faraz and what is haram, what is compulsory and what is impermissible, do and don't. That's the only amount of time they have got to dedicate for deen. They haven't got any additional time. That's the only time. That's the only amount of capacity they come with. So that's now, you can say approximately 98-99% of the public is like that. They only call that. That's what I must do, what I mustn't do. You can't go and tell them that Witr namaz is performed in this particular way and these are the reasons. This hadith appears in Bukhari Sharif, this in Muslim Sharif, this in Tirmizi and Abu Dawud, and these are the reasons of preference and why this hadith cannot be practiced, and how this hadith contradicts this hadith, therefore we give preference to this, and this was the earlier practice of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and this was the latter practice of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So he doesn't have the capacity to understand all that. When he doesn't have the capacity to understand all that, now how are you to present the deen to him? See? Now obviously, everybody does not have that capacity. One person came here, very sincere, good person, very intelligent, extremely intelligent. So he came here and Allah Pak blessed him with wealth as well. So he came to meet me before going for Umrah. So he tells me that I heard one bayan and they were emphasizing on reading all the Qaza Umris, you know. So I've got about 10 years of Qazas outstanding and I want to know, I heard the Fazilat and I read the virtues of performing Umrah Namaz in the Haram Sharif. One is going to be multiplied to 100,000. So I got 10 years of Qaza namazes. So I read a couple of namazes there. Will that compensate for the 10, 12 years of all my Qaza? Now what he asked is based on the information that he's got. This is what he read. And what he read was right. This is what he heard. What he heard was right, that namaz is multiplied 100,000. So when it's multiplied 100,000, can it compensate for all the missed namazes? Now that was his good heartedness. I say it's his good heartedness that he came to clear it up. It was playing in his mind perhaps. But now you see the discrepancy, how they can go off, how a person can go off totally, completely off. Right? This is just one simple example where I show you that everybody is not cut out to analyze deen, to draw conclusions, to come to right conclusions. Everybody doesn't have that ability. Some do have it and some don't. وَلَوْ رَدُّوهُ إِلَى الرَّسُولِ وَإِلَى أُولِي الْأَمْرِ مِنْهُمْ لَعَلِمَهُ الَّذِينَ يَسْتَنْبِتُونَهُ مِنْهُمْ. Some information comes relating public fear, public peace, etc., hadith or Quran, whatever. Then the right procedure is رَدُّوهُ إِلَى الرَّسُولِ وَإِلَى أُولِي الْأَمْرِ مِنْهُمْ. Refer it to the Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam in his lifetime. When he is not with you, then to the people of authority, ulama, etc., refer it to them. Now this is a situation, what do we do? And I tell you that this is not just confined to this zamana. Even in the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, every person was not in the position of making conclusions. Adi ibn Hatim radiyallahu anhu, when the verse of the Quran is revealed, وَكُلُوا وَشْرَبُوا حَتَّى يَتَبَيِّنَ لَكُمُ الْخَيْتُ الْأَبْيَدُ مِنَ الْخَيْتِ الْأَسْوَدِ مِنَ الْفَجْرِ. Eat and drink. Go on eating and drinking until the white thread of dawn appears clear from the black thread. So now what he did is he took two threads, one white one and one black thread, he placed it under his pillow. And the whole night he's watching now. Is the white thread becoming clear from the black? Is that white thread getting clear and conspicuous from the black thread? In the morning he went and related it to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. You must have a very, very, very broad pillow then. Because this is referring to the horizon. You say, you know, it's, you place a thread. So the whiteness that is spoken about is about the whiteness that appears on the horizon, not under your pillow. Okay? Now, I want to show you that even in the Sahaba Ikram, you won't have everybody of that highest level of understanding, that level of understanding, that level of fahm. So the Quran is saying in advance that you see, you will not have, everybody will not have that level of understanding. What you need to do? Then, رَدُّوهُ إِلَى الرَّسُولِ وَإِلَى أُولِي الْأَمْرِ مِنْهُمْ. Then refer it to the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Anything comes up, so Hazrat Adi radiallahu anhu refers it to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Rasul Allah Sallam is around. But now, Rasul Allah Sallam will go shortly, right? So then what is the Ummah to do? Now, refer it to the people in charge. إِلَى أُولِي الْأَمْرِ مِنْهُمْ. So, when this Yamama took place and several Sahaba Ikram and Qurra were shaheed, now Umar radiallahu anhu was disturbed that if there's going to be a few more battles like this and more of the Qurra are going to get martyred, then how is the Quran Sharif going to be preserved? So now this was a concern, it was a genuine concern, and he felt that the only way out is to compile the Quran in one book form, one place. Up till this day, the Quran wasn't compiled in one single place. It wasn't. But now it's a new thing. It wasn't out there in the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. In his entire duration, 23 years of his Mubarak life. So this work and this endeavor on this, Rasulullah did not express this. So now, Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu, Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu is concerned. When he's concerned, what was his duty to? What was his duty? His duty is to refer it to ulil amri minhum, people that are in authority. Authority will mean two things: that amount of knowledge they have, and they have that type of power. See, two things. Because the one that is not in authority, he cannot exercise his authority over the next person. You're not in authority and you go and force someone else to do something, you can't. You don't have the strength, you don't have any backing with you. Who are you to come and tell me? That will be the response. So the one that is got the control and he has the type of authority, he can command, he can stop and he can command. He's got the right to do it. See? So he sees something and he refers it. He refers it to Hazrat Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. Right? Then some deliberation and it was done. Right? In the time of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, some people were doing something odd in the masjid, whatever it was. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu stopped them. He stopped them or he expressed his disapproval. Right? He expressed his disapproval. So now, there were two tabaqas. See, there was one group and one jamaat who did not have that highest level of understanding. Then it was Ibn Mas'ud who had the highest level of understanding, for whose understanding Rasulullah SAW also, whose understanding he is also sanctioned and endorsed. That whatever he sanctions for my ummah, I also approve. He approves something, I approve it also for my ummah. So his understanding has been already endorsed and supported. It's called the endorsement of Rasulullah SAW. So now, if the Sahaba Ikram have got a problem, they will refer it to this type of people, Abu Bakr, Ibn Mas'ud, the long time, etc., etc. They will bring it to their attention. لَعَلِمَهُ الَّذِينَ يَسْتَنْبِتُونَهُ مِنْهُمْ. They'll be able to take it out, understand. Because they know, more or less, what Rasulullah SAW wanted and what he didn't want. That is why Aisha radiallahu anha says, لَوْ عَلِمَ Rasulullah SAW had known what the women have started off, what the women have started off nowadays, then he would have stopped them from entering the masjid. See? Now, Aisha radiallahu anha was of that level of understanding. See, she lived with Rasulullah SAW closely for approximately maybe about 10 years or 9 years from the age of 9 until 18 or somewhere around the 9 years approximately, she lived with Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and there was a lot of intimacy and a lot of understanding. Her understanding was profound, very mature, very sensible. And so Rasulullah had a lot of confidence in her, and her understanding also was very profound, very, very sound. Now, because of the close association with Rasulullah, she understood what was the real mansha of Rasulullah. And we'll have this mansha thing, we will have it amongst ourselves as well. See, alright, look at the situation, take a situation now. These the Jamaat Satis, they see a certain situation coming up in their country here, or wherever, whichever the country. So what will they do? The first step is they will discuss it. If it is within the parameters of the hidayah that they have got from overseas, arriving on Nizamuddin, then they will carry on. Why? It is within the same parameters. But it doesn't seem very clear. If they don't have any clarity, then they say, no, let's refer it to the elders. Now, why will they refer it to the elders? That's the question. Why do they refer it to the elders? Because of the age? Then there can be someone here also of that same age. If there is someone 60 years or 70 years there, then there is someone 60 years or 70 years here as well. Is it because of their knowledge? Then if there is someone that's knowledgeable there, then there is someone knowledgeable here as well. Then why is it that they will say that let's refer it to the elders? The only reason that you can see and you can say is that they understood the mansha of the pioneers of the work. They lived with them, they worked with them, and they understood the mansha. So you hold their mansha, you hold that very, very dearly, that they understood the mansha, they understood what is required, this type of circumstances they went through, this type of conditions came around, they understood it, they inherited it, and now they are the right people to refer this problem to. Let's refer it to them and take the guidance, we take the lead, we take the clue from them. Right. So you see, this mansha business is not a new business, it's an old business, and it's applicable everywhere. There are some people that are gifted with that type of intellect, that type of acumen, that type of far-sightedness and understanding. And there are others that don't have that. So those that don't have it, the right thing is they must refer to those that have it. Who is superior and who is inferior, we're not talking about that. So we're not talking about who's superior and who's inferior, but we're talking of procedure. Then it may be that the one that is here local, he may be superior than the person is there in private on Nizamuddin. So that's besides the point. The thing is that who, in our understanding, general observation, who's understood the mansha of the Akabir Buzurganuddin better? You would say they have understood it. So now you refer to them. See? So Aisha radiallahu anha is saying that if Rasulullah had to know what this woman has started today, nowadays. What did she mean when she say what the woman have started nowadays? What did she mean? What she meant was that in the day of Rasulullah, they were exercising a lot of caution when they went out. No perfume, no attractive dress, right? Shabbily dressed, like the hadith says, tafilat, right? Untidily, they are leaving their homes and they are coming to the masjid and they are returning. Now, Hazrat Aisha radiallahu anha has seen that now these women that are in this zamana, they don't observe that type of caution and that type of care that was observed in the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. In the one end, you need to understand, on the one angle, you need to understand that she understood the mansha of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. She also knows that Rasulullah had allowed this, right? And the third thing that's before her is the halat presently. So this halat will change all the time. See, like in the Jamaat now, the halat changed, right? Halat changed, so they will give you a different directive now. The halat changed here, the circumstances have changed from one to the other now. How do you do the work, right? For example, some years ago, say about 15, 20 years ago, you could speak openly on any topic, politics, anything you could speak, right? Now the halat have changed. So you can't go and talk about politics and you can't talk run any government down. Because if you do this, then you will put a spanner into the work. The work will be stopped. So they say, now when you speak, then you have to speak in a certain way so that the work can carry on. You don't get into any some type of a political quagmire and you don't get caught up, bogged down in any type of problem. The work must carry on, must flourish. So you don't get any caught, you don't get caught up. So now there's three things that you need to keep in mind. She knows all this. Number two is she spent that amount of time with Rasulullah Pasram where she had inherited that type of mizaj and mansha. And number three is she's seeing the present circumstance as well, halat also. Now after all this, then she comes to the conclusion that if Rasulullah Pasram were alive today and he's seen what this woman has started. In other words, they're not so careful now. They don't exercise that type of caution. Right? And when they don't exercise that type of caution, what will happen? Soon what will happen? Then as we are moving in time, things will get even worse. If they're not exercising the caution now, then you'll find a fitna will start up just now. That woman will become immodest. Immorality will begin to spread. And modesty is an important aspect of faith. Now how do we curb this? How do we control this? How do we control this? So she says, no, Rasulullah would have definitely stopped it. Now that is why our ulama say that women will not be allowed to enter into masjid nowadays. Now you need to have this mindset as I explained to you. Added to it you need to have one more thing, then you will get the equation right. You see, if you don't have all the facts and figures together, then you can't get the equation right. And all these facts I've given you, the fourth fact that you need to have is people that are living in countries like how we live, you know, where it's under kuffar control, right? Right, under kuffar control. Can you force any person? Can you command any person? Can you now have any authority over any person? You can't. If a woman, for example, she has left her home, Muslim woman, and she's walking, and she's not at all rightly dressed. Can you command her that you change your dress? She's put on perfume and she's coming to the masjid. Can you stop her? You open the door to the room, to the masjid. You open the doors of the masjid to this woman, and she put on perfume and she came to the masjid. Do you have that authority and that power to go and stop her? No, come, get out. Do you have that authority? You don't have that authority, right? On the way she's, now I'm talking of some real, I'm not talking of hearsay, I'm talking of genuine situations. What happened and what have happened. She's coming to the masjid and there's a man that is coming to the masjid and happily talking away, how you, I didn't see you for Fajr namaz, but tomorrow I got a dawat in my place, you must come, you know. Now they are walking, see, after namaz we'll go together home. I'll accompany you. Right? Now, all this is going to happen. They are coming, man, woman, gay and happy and whatever, and they're coming right to the masjid in this manner, leaving the masjid that way. So what does the masjid eventually turn out to be? It turns out to be a place for socializing. They're socializing, meeting up, expressing your feelings for that woman, and that woman is expressing her feelings for you. So the whole theme of the masjid then changes. This was the theme of the, now I want to know that in the type of circumstances we live, conditions we live, have we the strength to have any authority and influence of this woman? Can you stop them? Generally. Maybe one, two places. Muawi is so strict, you know, so powerful, karate expert or something, radio fix or someone, right? Muana Isa from West Street. One, two people will be able to control it, right? But overall everybody will do it. Everybody will have that type of strength. You won't have that strength. You're not going to have that strength. When you don't have that strength, then what is the next best option? The next best thing is, right, this is an all men masjid only. Woman, you perform your namaz in your home. You're not going to control it. You can't control it. You can't control it, you have to be open, you have to be clear about it, you have to acknowledge the fact that I cannot manage this. And I cannot manage it, then the second best thing is you remain in the house, you do your thing there, and we'll do our thing here. So it's cut and dry. This is a place of ibadat. We leave it exclusive for ibadat, not socializing, love making, making friends, etc. That's not the purpose, that's not the theme of the masjid. The theme of the masjid is something else entirely. See, so what I want to show you is, you'll have different categories in the ummah. I just branched off onto this, but what I want to show you is they'll have different categories of understanding. Now all these facts that I brought to you, right, tell me what percentage of the ulama, let alone the common people, have all these facts that I brought to you today. Okay? Do they think like this? Do they rationalize like this? But is this common sense and common logic or not? It's common sense. Is it something that you need a rocket scientist or something to come and bring these facts? No, this is common sense, it's front of us, we know we will not be able to manage it. Right? There are children coming, jammies in the masjid, jammies and t-shirt. And you can't tell them one word, can you tell them a word? Right? That whole Western type of mentality is coming here. A child will be playing in the masjid, and 95%, 98% of the musallis can't tell them anything. The bichara, the imam sahab, will have to take the mic and will shout them. And this student also will be still catching it, will having a laugh there. They're not worried about it. Oh, the imam sahab is saying something. Ke man parni. So the imam sahab, generally 99% of the masjid, he doesn't have that control. Even of the children over the youngsters. So forget the woman. What's going to happen then? So can you see what will the masjid turn out to be eventually? Socializing, love making, the whole theme of the masjid will then be changed. It's a different theme now. It's not that same theme. So what I'm showing you here with the fazl of Allah Ta'ala is that everybody will not have that level of understanding of deen. One will be of a higher level, one will be of a lower level. Now there'll be several obligations here. One obligation is to preserve the deen, to look after the deen. Right? One obligation will be to pass on the deen. Now, for both to preserve the deen and to pass on the deen, you will need to have thinkers. People that can think far, they can think far ahead, far advanced, they can think. Okay, if you're going to open the doors here just now, then what is going to be the consequence? Just now, what's going to be the end result? So they'll have to have that type of acumen and that type of reasoning ability, the foresight. They've got some foresightedness. Okay, we do this, then what's going to be the consequence afterwards? You need to have that class of people. So they are some think tanks. And then you'll have to have some people that can reach out to the public. You see, a community of bees, right? So you'll have to have someone at the center, hatching those eggs, whatever structures have to be for preserving that hive. You'll have a whole jamaat there. You'll have a whole jamaat there. There'll be some that are on the security. Anybody coming in with any nectar, right? Spot check, custom check. You got any pollution? Any pollution, you stop him, fine him, penalty him, penalize him there and then. Right? And after the custom check, you're allowed. Right? So you got a security here. So this security, everybody have to remain at the center. Right? They have to see the pollen, they have to see the quality, and they have to also see the hive, that the hive is well maintained. All the time they have to see the hive. So one group. Then you'll see the other group that is going out, going to fetch pollen, whatever it is, right? Nectar, whatever, they're going to fetch that and bring it. So if now they say, this jamaat that is going to follow, that is going to fetch that pollen, whatever it is, they say, if it wasn't for us, this hive would have been totally empty. Absolutely nothing would have had here. It's because of our fikr, it's because of our mehnat and fikr that this hive has filled up with so much of honey. Right? And you people are just wasting time, you're just looking after here. But really, our our fikr is the main fikr. So if these people become impressed and overawed by what these working bees are doing, and they say, no, what you're saying is right. We're getting left out with all the sawab of collecting all the pollen. You're getting it, and we, nowhere, you know. So we must also go out. What's going to happen to the center? Tell me what's going to happen to the center. Right? One person came from India, he was giving a talk, you see. So he had to say chaos, you know. So now he didn't know the pronunciations. He says, there's a lot of chows in the world. A lot of chows in the world. So anyway, what I want to show you is that there will be this type of distribution of work, even in the preservation of deen. Preservation and propagation of deen, you will have to have some distribution, some type of distribution. This jamaat cannot become impressed over that jamaat. Though they may shout their guts out, but this jamaat will have to just remain. Right. So there will be so many jamaats, it will be all active, they will be actively involved. All khulasa, all theme will be just the preservation, security of deen, and taking this deen, passing it on to the second generation. Now you look at it at this level. Now look at it at the second level. I explained earlier on that 99% of the public, they only want to know what is halal and haram. They can't go into the nitty-gritties. They can't understand and analyze arguments. Arguments they can't analyze. 99% can't understand it. Either they can't understand it or they don't have the time to analyze all the facts. Someone will come, one odd person, he'll have some additional fikr or some additional interest, and he'll open up the translation of Bukhari Sharif. I said, no, but Bukhari Sharif has got about reading Surah Fatiha behind the Imam, for example, right? What do you have to say? Bukhari Sharif is a hadith. Now, has he got all that information of the hadith which is required to come to that type of conclusion? Does he have all that information? He's just got this one hadith here that you're supposed to be reciting Surah Fatiha behind the Imam. Now, if you storm him with 10 questions, for example, you said, alright, that namaz is not permissible without reciting Surah Fatiha. La salata illa bi fatihatil kitab, right? He came and quoted that hadith. Now you asked him 10 questions over and above that you asked him. Alright. You say that there is no, that person's namaz is not valid who doesn't perform or doesn't recite Surah Fatiha. So you ask him, now what about that person who comes to the masjid right at a time when the Imam is going into ruku? Now you said that his namaz is not valid. If his namaz is not valid according to Bukhari Sharif, now this person, what must he do? The Imam is going on to ruku. Must he remain standing and recite the Surah Fatiha, or should he join the Imam? If he remains standing, then he is contradicting the other hadith which says, إِذَا رَكَعَ فَرْكَعُ. When the Imam makes ruku, then you make ruku. Right? And if he goes into ruku, then he's contradicting the hadith which says that that namaz is not valid without the recitation of the Surah Fatiha. Now, what is the person supposed to be doing? You see, ye log jo as khud mutala karte hai, they look at the kitab themselves. Now, tell me, what are they going to do? If they're practicing on this hadith, they're going against this hadith. If they're practicing that hadith, they're going against this hadith. Say, bhai, Al-Bukhari Sharif, what do you do? Give it to me. I'll leave it in the madrasa as a tabarruk for you. You'll get the sawab. But you just do as I tell you to do. Just carry on doing that. Now, you have to tell him all the arguments. Alright, this is the hadith. And what this refers to, Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullahi is the ustad of Imam Bukhari. And is the ustad of Imam Bukhari. Then he said that this hadith applies to that person who performs namaz individually. هذا إذا كان منفردا, right? Who is this Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullahi alayh? He is the ustad of Imam Bukhari. So what he says that this is with respect to that person who reads the namaz individually. So now that application, who will know it? That person that is cut out for all this, he will be able to explain that. And the normal alim also will not be able to explain all this type of thing. 9 or 10 you go to the person and say, hey, ma, Bukhari Sharif mein aisa likha hua hai. Kya kare? Aapki baat ko maano ya hadith? Nabi Sam ki baat ko maano? I say, listen to you or must listen to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? See how they put the question to you. I say, listen to you now, best is ever, or must listen to what the hadith says, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says. Now the Imam Sahib is in a corner, hey, lal pila ho raha hai, it's turning blue and yellow. What to do? So the understanding is not the same, and everybody doesn't have that amount of time. But still, like, keep in your mind that obligation of deen is a general obligation. Everybody has to acquire it, and everybody has to pass it on. But everybody doesn't have that time, nor everybody has that capacity. So the one level of propagation will be what is offered at the maktab. Right? You come here, we'll teach you the recitation of the Quran Sharif, we'll give you the obligatory things and the forbidden things. You got your parcel, whatever hamper you needed, you take your hamper and you move on. Right? So the one level, that is the 99%, you will prepare the hampers for them and you will move them on. Right? Now there will be one other class in that community who says, no, that level of da'wat is not sufficient for me. This is da'wat also. Da'wat is to invite, right? The invitation, the invitation can be in two types. One invitation is those that have come to you. So you are extending your hospitality to them, right? That's the one type of invitation who came to you. So you're extending the hospitality to them. And one is those that haven't come, so going out and calling them. There's two types of da'wat. One is that you are reaching out to them, and one, those that are coming to you. If you only confine yourself to the one, and you're only reaching out to them, so who's going to attend to those who have already come to you? Understand? There'll be these two brackets that you'll have. One you have to reach out to, and one that has come to you. So one will have to make a mihnat here, right? And one will have to make a mihnat to those who aren't responding yet. Understand? See, all these different halat that you'll get. Islam is a comprehensive, complete religion. So if anybody comes, then there is facility for everybody. We got a workshop, we got an infrastructure that can accommodate everybody. That is Islam. We got an infrastructure that can accommodate everybody. It's an outpatient, we got structures for him. It's a trauma unit, we got a structure for him. He needs a dialysis every week or every second, third day, we got a provision for him. He's a heart patient, we've got something for him. Or no, he needs to be taken to the childbirth, what do you say? Maternity ward, we got a facility for the maternity ward, right? We got everything. But now you come to the hospital, say, no, maternity ward. Say, no, it's not complete. Right? This hospital is not complete. So Islam is a complete religion, and it will have a facility for all, everybody. Maternity ward, care, pediatrician, care, cardiac unit, care, trauma unit, every unit you'll have there. Everybody, every facility. Now that da'wat is complete. See, Allahumma rabba hadhi da'wati tamma. It's a complete, perfect invitation. Anybody. So one you reach out to, and one that comes out to you. Right? Then, amongst the people that come out to you, I'm showing you da'wat, you see. It's all da'wat. The people that come to you, there will be people of different categories. One will say that, I just want to know what is faraz and what is haram. Just give me my hamper and let me move on. I only got about 5 years to come with you. So you pass my hamper and you let me go. So he passed his hamper and you moved him on. He went away. Now you get a different category of people. Say, no, I want to learn even further. You say that this is faraz. I want to know how you came to this conclusion. So I want to learn Islam with all the details, the nitty-gritties. So, all right, we've got a provision for you as well. If you got a hospital, then we've got a medical school as well. Yeah? We've got a medical school or something. Now you come here to the hospital for that detail, we won't give it to you. Because here, you just take your hamper and move. You take your hamper and you move. But you want that, then you go to the medical school, and the medical school will furnish you with all that. Understood? So similarly, if that person comes to the maktab, and he says now, you know, Surah Fatiha, why should we not read it behind the imam? Right? It's a wrong horse you're betting. This is not the place. That is the madrasa where there is higher level of knowledge. Where there is a higher level of knowledge, higher level of education, you go there. They will give you that parcel and they will tie you up and send you away. Right? You're coming here, now you're coming to a hospital to ask now all these type of questions, you know. It's not, we're not cut out for that. Or we, if we cut out for that, we don't have the time. We don't have the time to tell you all these things. Yeah. We just cutting and passing people away. Yeah. Someone to the Kabristan, and someone wherever. But we, that's our job. A little bit of like a butcher shop. So we just cut and pass it everybody to the Kabristan, or we send them back. One of the two. That's our work. That's what we are reserved for. That's not our job. You want that, you go to the higher level. Then only can you say that Islam, that deen is complete. It's got all the infrastructures. But if you don't have that, so now I want a detailed understanding of Islam. Right? I say, no, I don't have the infrastructure. I want to know the tafsir of this. So, right. You go to the madrasa, they will teach you Arabic everything, and you'll come to that where you can understand your tafsir yourself. So he's giving it to you. But you make the initiative, you take the pains to go out. See? So now that's a different level of doubt. As I say, Islam is complete. So someone wants to take that Islam just that he can manage. He wants that amount of dawat. He wants a brief dawat that he can just manage and he can carry on his life. But someone wants that dawat with all its details. He doesn't just want that brief dawat, he wants the dawat with the details, with everything. Right. So for that you will need a facility, and that facility in medicine it will be a medical school, medical college. In Islam you will say a madrasa or a darulum, etc., where you will get that type of details. Right. Then he turns around and says, no, but you know, you spoke about malice and pride and etc., whatever it was. So Islam offers that as well. Yeah, Islam offers that. So then Where's the university where I can obtain that type of information and that type of perfection? Where will I get that? So then you go to a khanka. So do you see, they're also doing dawat. The khanka is doing dawat, the madrasa is doing dawat, then maktab is doing dawat. Right? So all these people are doing dawat, but they're doing it in a different dimension. One is doing it brief. Right? Now, then you will look at all this, when you look at it holistically, alright, you will see then what is the need of the time. What is the need of the time? Then based on what is the need of the time, you will say that has a degree of importance over the other work. What is the need of the time? That has a degree of importance over other work. And now to illustrate that, simple example to illustrate that. Alright, you went somewhere, say for example, Lusiki Siki, right, in Transkei, like a few years ago, in the Lusiki Siki, for 5 or 10 kilometers, there's no water, right? There's no water. Now, hypothetical situation, just to illustrate this example, right? Now, you go there, and you say, I want to do some work here, or do some Isale Sawab work. Maybe there's 500 families there, and each person in that 500 has got 3 copies of the Quran Sharif. What do you say? I want to do Isale Sawab work. I want to convey Sawab. Someone is marhum, some relative, and I want to go and do some Isale Sawab work. So, in the meanwhile, you know that there is no water here, and each person there has got 3 copies of the Quran Sharif. So, can you say that the Quran Sharif is not important? You can't say that. But what is the need of the time? The need of the time is these people are they are desperately in need of water. So digging a borehole under the circumstance will be more important than distributing a copy of the Quran Sharif. Understood? Though this is also Isale Sawab, you see, this is also Isale Sawab, but this is now more important than that. So the same now, in some circumstances, some situations, you'll find that the jamaat work will be more important. Why it's more important? Like the same example, you take that lusiki siki, and everybody has got three copies of the Quran Sharif. But they don't have water. Basic thing to live, they don't have it. Basic commodities. Or not. This takes preference under the circumstance. Under the circumstance, this takes preference over that. Understand? Now, this is the whole khulasa and the whole nichor, the whole essence of da'wat. Understand? You need to have all that infrastructures to say that your da'wat is complete and perfect. And if you don't have that infrastructure, then you will say that there is some type of deficiency in this da'wat that you are extending. Because you see, when you're going to invite, right? When you're going to invite, you know, call people to deen. Right? So you call them, now they will come, they will respond. So you have got a showroom, right? You have got a showroom. When you say, I'm calling people to Islam, so you'll have to call them to your showroom, all right? Showroom of Islam, the Samarkas center, wherever it is. So at the Markas now, he'll want to know, you know, you spoke about Islam, this. I want to see that. What you are saying, what you are talking about, I want to see that Islam. So no, I don't have the structure. Then what are you inviting towards? You need to have every structure in place for your da'wah to be complete. Otherwise, your da'wah is deficient, is incomplete. That person you are calling, say, you know, hey, you told me that, you know, that the showroom has got all the type of cars. Now we got every type of Mercedes and BMW, we've got all types. Now you come to the workshop, he's got nothing there. Or is it all used and broken down cars there? What will you say? That man deceived us. So similarly, when you are inviting people to Islam, then the one person needs to go and invite. He needs to go, is the field worker. And the other person needs to see that the center is well maintained, well preserved. So the one that is coming from outside into the showroom, he's also got something to see. He's seeing a fair picture of the invitation that he got. One is marketing the product. And when he comes to see the product, now he sees what he been promised about, what you've been talking about, what you've been marketing, he sees it. See? So, the khulasa of what you're talking is, da'wat is a very, very extensive thing. Right? It's a very extensive thing. To confine it to one particular situation is unfair. Right? Number three is also, you will be also unfair and you'll be biased if you don't show, if you don't accept that this particular type of work is more important under these circumstances, right? Whatever the particular type of work, say for example, the Jamaat work is active there in a particular area, right? But there is no maktab, right? So what will you say? No, you'll be unfair if you're only emphasizing on the Jamaat's going out and not establishing a maktab here. You'll be unfair, you'll be doing an injustice. And if there is a maktab that is running, that is thriving, but there isn't the type of jamaat activity that is required there, right? Then you say, no, you're unfair. That this maktab is flourishing, now what you need to do is to see that there are some field workers going out and coming. For this to remain generating, then you need to keep sending out. If all the bees, like I said, in the hive, they're only going to work on that, only going to work on the hive, and there's not going to be any field workers, what's going to happen? That honey that they have got there in the center will be finished, all the stock will be over just now. Because they're going to eat themselves up, it's going to be finished. Then what? So you'll need someone here at the center, and you'll need someone going out. So this dual effort will be required all the time. Allah Ta'ala Tawfiq Naseeb.